A few years ago, my daughter was a big K-pop fanatic, specifically the group BTS. And from the first time I heard them, I thought, this sounds like 90s R&B. BTS is one of the first K-pop groups to blow up here in the United States. And it's no secret how much Black American culture has influenced K-pop music at large. But now these groups are facing a call to action that has come along with embracing American culture, and that's activism. Crystal Anderson has been looking more into this, tracing the many connections between Black American popular music and K-pop. Her book on the subject is called Soul and Soul, African American Popular Music and K-pop. She's an affiliate Korean studies faculty member at George Mason University. Crystal and I spoke last September, and we're going to revisit that conversation now. We started out talking about how U.S. K-pop fans had mobilized last summer to support Black Lives Matter. They used their massive and collective power on social media to do this. And the company behind BTS, Big Hit, actually responded and donated $1 million to BLM. But they were an outlier in K-pop, and fans wanted more from their K-pop idols. And I asked Crystal about the conflict there.
The conflict is that Korea has its own culture, and more importantly, it has a specific kind of mission for its outward-facing Korean artists, particularly the pop groups. So the pop groups are supposed to have a very positive image of Korea. So it's not new, but what is new is that the United States has a particular kind of history, and it has a particular kind of history in relation to South Korea. So I think going forward, what we're going to see is a different kind of negotiation of that relationship.
This is really interesting, and you lay this out somewhat in your book. Your book also really lays out the influence Black American artists have had on K-pop artists, and it's significant. We'll listen to a bit of those influences in just a moment. But how did this connection between Black American pop and Korean pop even come to be?
Well, it was there at the beginning. Most histories of K-pop, and we're talking about contemporary Korean popular music, and one of the first groups drew on hip-hop and R&B of the 1990s. And so it's really there at the beginning.
Under the huge umbrella of this genre, you note that there are three types of artists: K-pop groups, R&B, and hip-hop. And you selected some songs that are K-pop in various genres, and also some comparisons to popular Black American artists in the U.S. for us to listen to. First, let's listen to your picks in the K-pop groups category. KC and JoJo's All My Life up against 2PM's Wanna Love You Again. I mean, hearing them back to back, we really do hear the influence there. Why did you pick these two songs to compare?
I chose these two songs because 2PM is kind of on the sexier end of the spectrum of K-pop idol groups. But what people may not realize is that the group also boasts a very significant bank of vocalists. But going through their discography, I kept coming across these R&B ballads, and they were R&B ballads with no qualification. And I thought that would be a really great comparison to KC and JoJo. And so you can hear very clearly those similarities.
And I want to talk to you more. We'll talk in just a moment about that influence, but then how transparent many of these K-pop artists are about who they're influenced by. This next group, though, this is an example of R&B acts in the K-pop genre, and we have Can't Stop Loving You by Korean artist Brown-Eyed Soul, up against a song by Sly and the Family Stone. Let's listen.
Can't stop loving you. Can't stop loving me. I can't stop loving you. You're the woman. Dance to the music. Dance to the music. Dance to the music.
Okay, I hear it. What are the commonalities that you hear in these two?
So Brown Eyed Soul is a Korean R&B group, and they've had a changing lineup, but the constant is the founder, and that founder is a musician. And so the great thing about Brown Eyed Soul is that it shows that K-pop doesn't just draw from the contemporary music of its time. It also reaches back to older genres of Black popular music.
You know, a lot of music critics make the distinction between what K-pop is doing here, which you even say is a skill of hybridity versus what many white artists have done in the past by taking Black American blues music, for instance, and essentially stealing it. Why do you make this distinction?
Well, one thing that we can see in those instances is that often those songs that were initially written and performed by African American artists were covered by white performers to achieve popularity, but those covers were watered down versions of the original, and they were designed to suit the taste of a particular mainstream, and so would describe that mainstream as white. And the Black originators were not given credit. However, what I see in K-pop, and as you said at the beginning, it's hard to miss the R&B influence in K-pop. So I like to use the concept of citation. Much like you cite your sources for a news story or for a research paper, K-pop artists are citing the R&B music tradition, and they're doing so through authentic performances. And Brittany Cooper has used this term to describe this idea in relation to popular music, that the idea is to point the listener back to the original. So it's not a conspiracy and it's not hidden. In addition, K-pop creators have actually worked with African-American artists and producers to create this music. So that also reinforces that connection.
You also picked out some hip-hop artists to compare. We have Korean hip-hop artist Primary with the song 2 Weeks up against The Roots performing The Next Movement. Let's listen. Side note, Crystal, that was my jam back in the day. tell us more about these.
So I chose these two because there's a tradition of live instrumentation in hip-hop. In K-pop, Primary is a Korean musical producer on the hip-hop label Amoeba Culture. And when you listen to Primary's music, there is almost always live instrumentation. He does very little sampling. Just like you have that live instrumentation in The Next Movement, you have the rhythms of R&B, and you have rap all over that as well.
You know, we started off this convo talking about the stark cultural differences that were shown at the start of this country's racial reckoning back earlier in the summer. Do you see a future in which K-pop can sustain a fan base here and become a part of the musical landscape on a deeper level? What are some of the challenges in that effort here in the United States?
I would say some of the challenges include language. That's the primary challenge. The other challenge, though, is related to the history of the United States and its history with immigration, with Korea as a country, with the racial history in the United States itself, that colors the way that people perceive the cultural production of other countries. But I have often argued, if you look at other kinds of cultural production in the United States that are popular with subgroups, those are sustained in a far longer kind of way. One of my favorites is kung fu films, martial arts films from China, and samurai films from Japan to a certain extent, or something like anime. These are things that live in subcultures, but they are significant. So I think that you'll always have a subculture that's interested in K-pop, just like you have a subculture that's interested in Bollywood, in anime, in Chinese martial arts films. But the degree to which they infiltrate the mainstream, I think we just still have to see whether that's going to be sustained.
Crystal Anderson is the author of the new book, Soul in Seoul, African-American Popular Music and K-Pop. Crystal, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We just listened back to my conversation with K-pop scholar Crystal Anderson from September.